I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Welcome back to the Hardware Unbox podcast. Steve's back from his holiday, so we're back into it again. We'll be talking about the 14900KS in this podcast, some FSR 3.1 news, some other interesting Steam stuff. I've started some OLED burn-in testing. And yeah, you'll obviously as well get some updates of what Steve has been doing that caused him to not be part of our podcast last week. So, well, let's just get into it. Steve, we're back after a week off. You've had a little bit of a holiday that I'm sure we'll be talking about later. How are you doing? Back into the swing of things?
Back into the swing of things. So maybe we'll get more than like two or three podcasts in a row.
Nice.
Fingers crossed. I mean, I'm sure I'll get sick in 2 weeks and that'll, you know, ruin those plans. But from this point forward, we'll see how many we can do in a row.
Well, we are approaching, well, not quite at this exact moment, but soon it will be winter, so that your risk of getting something will probably increase a little bit. But yeah, I mean, this morning I've just been troubleshooting some display testing related BS, just like the testing tools not working over USB. So that was a fun 3 hours I spent tearing my hair out trying to figure out what was going on. It's solved now, but boy, I was frustrated. So hopefully this is a very smooth and calming podcast where I can recover and not have to deal with that anymore because, yeah, I was pretty annoyed. Anyway.
Well, one glitch and it might put you over the edge.
It could. If this stops working midway through, man, I'll just be, the F-bombs will be coming out. It'll be carnage in here. I thought we'd start this podcast by talking about the Core i9-14900KS because was it last week?
Actually, I saw you did make a video on that. I have to fully admit that I've just got back from holidays. As soon as I got back, I caught up on emails, did some testing. I have no idea what happened while I was away. I did see a 14900KS news video from you and I did what, that's right, that was the one that had me laughing from start to finish. That was very well done.
No, thanks.
And I do feel like, despite not having reviewed or physically seen or touched the 14900KS, even prior to your video, just knowing that there was a 14900KS, I feel like I knew everything there was to know about that CPU and it absolutely doesn't warrant a review. And a review of those KS CPUs has always been pointless anyway because, well, that's not really what they're about. I'm not really sure what they're about, but it's certainly not a review. Anyway, sorry, go on.
It was fun looking back at the research like of your past KS series reviews because I was under the impression that you maybe only tested like one of them previously, but I think you've actually tested all of the previous KS CPUs. So the 9900KS, 12900, and 13900KS, you've tested all of those. And I was like, okay, that's a surprise because they're all pretty much offering the same thing. And yeah, I mean, I woke up and I wasn't expecting to cover that information. Intel sent over some 14900KS details and I was like, oh, okay, this is pretty much, as you said, like it's expected. It's not much of an improvement. Really not that exciting. And I was umming and ahhing about it. I'm like, I haven't got much on today. The channel's been a little slow. You know what? I'll just have some fun with the video and kind of goof around a little bit and explain what's going on here. And some of the performance charts were a bit weird, sort of like weird comparisons and things that were worth talking about. But yeah, it's not like I was sitting around being like, man, I'm super excited to cover the 14900KS. It was kind of just like a bit of filler content while I was doing some other things, mm-hmm. I guess.
I was going to say it's a bit sad when that's the situation, but then I suppose I did cover all the other KSs and the industry would have been much more exciting for some of those previously. I think probably at the time I did cover it because it was so pointless, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
It was so far in that direction that it was humorous covering it, which is the same conclusion you came to. I didn't get sampled I don't think I got sampled the 1200KS. I definitely didn't get sampled the 1300KS. I had to get them through other avenues, and I wasn't sampled the 1400KS, so Intel didn't send one of those out. So if I was going to cover it in time for the announcement, I would have had to try and get it somewhere else. And I knew it was coming before I left for holidays, and I was like, well, that is a well-timed holiday because I have to put. I don't feel guilty putting no effort into trying to acquire one of those CPUs and then review it and come to the same conclusion we've come to every single time.
Yeah, it's a bit of a pointless product to test, really. Mm. I mean, like you can see from... I guess you shouldn't, when reviewing, look at a spec sheet and be like, I know how that's going to perform. But in the case of a 14900KS, you look at it and you're like, this is going to be at best 2, maybe 3 if we're lucky. Like, oh, that would be a really good result, 3% faster.
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to be a few percent faster. It's just not, like I know there's some outlets that did end up testing it and did indeed find that it was, you know, I think one outlet said like 1.5% faster or something. It's like if you need to go to a decimal point to tell how much faster it is than the other product, then it's definitely not worth covering. If it can't be a single non-decimal, you know, number, just put it on the shelf, don't bother, I reckon.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a binned part. It's meant to ensure the best possible overclocking, whether that be memory or cores. It's meant to be the most premium of premium silicon. That's why you pay a premium for it. And really, it would only make sense for people who are, I suppose, overclocking competitions and things like that.
Yeah.
So beyond that, not a terribly useful part. And it's not even a special part in the sense that, you know, the Core i9-1400K is certainly a very good CPU. I always say, like, arguing between what's better for gaming, a 14900K or a 7800X3D or whatever other top-tier CPU you want to throw in there, it's pretty pointless. They're all very similar. There's, you know, the AMD dip thing that you hear about, obviously that's garbage and not true at all. Like, that's just not a thing. Yeah. The 7800X3D is every bit as good as a 1400K when it comes to gaming performance. There'll be some games where the Intel CPU shines. There'll be some where the AMD CPU shines. Overall, much of a muchness. And, you know, then there's other things you can look at, like power consumption or productivity, where the 1400KS is obviously better than the 7800X3D. But yeah, the KS version, it's like a special edition version, I suppose, of the overclocking version, as I said. But yeah, all pretty pointless for covering further. If you've seen the 1400K and you know what that offers, the KS is just, a binned version.
I think they're probably not expecting to sell very many of these, let's be honest. Like, they're not going out and making millions upon millions of 14900KSs and trying to sell them at that price. It's a product designed for a very specific and niche use case that isn't everyday buyers. Like, mm-hmm. they're not expecting people who would just normally go out and buy a 14900K to buy the KS model instead. Like, it's like Intel is sitting around going, we're going to make a 2% faster processor and deliberately make it way more expensive and expect this to sell really, really well. Like, they're not dumb. Like, that's a really dumb thing to do.
Mm-hmm.
They know that they're trying to sell this to, I think you've probably come up with the most reasonable explanation, which is like overclocking competitions. You see people trying to hit like 9 gigahertz or something on a 14900KS. They're trying to hit that like frequency absolute maximum limit. And you know, I don't know whether the service is still around, but there used to be a few websites you could buy binned processors from. So they would buy retail samples and then just go through a bidding process and resell you the higher performing chips at a premium. And Intel, I'm guessing, sort of saw those sorts of things. It's like, well, I guess we could be doing that and making like a small premium on these chips instead of having someone else do it. So we may as well do it, make a little bit of money. And if you're trying to get it to 9 gigahertz on liquid nitrogen or whatever, use this chip, but everyone else go with the other thing. I mean, they haven't sampled it really. It was kind of a low fanfare announcement. So it's not like they were trying to make this a big deal mm-hmm. processor. And mm-hmm. I don't think they've done that with the previous KS models either. It's always been after release, like this is what, 6 months or so after the release of the 14th gen. It gets to that point, they put it out, whatever, and they try and make a bit of money, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Does it matter if Intel makes them? Like, I see some criticism being like, you know, is this embarrassing for Intel? You know, they make a processor that's slightly faster. Does anyone really care about that sort of thing?
No. I mean, I see where those comments are coming from, but ultimately, no. Is it embarrassing? Like I said, I don't know what your take is, but I don't think the 14900K is an embarrassing processor. Mm-hmm. It's very powerful. Yeah, if it used, because I guess I've seen some comments where they say, you know, this is Intel's AMD FX type moment, which, you know, that's misremembering quite poorly. That's stretching the truth somewhat. Like mm-hmm. if the 14900KS was slower than like a Ryzen 5 AM4 model processor, then mm-hmm. okay, fair enough. Like back in the FX days, you had the top tier 8000, 9000 series FX processors losing or matching Intel Core i3s in games. So that was bad, using obviously significantly more power. Yeah, look, in terms of efficiency, the 14900KS, that entire generation isn't great, but it's certainly delivering the performance. The 1400K is an exceptionally good gaming CPU. Arguably the fastest for, you know, certain titles. Well, not even arguably, it is the fastest in certain titles. It's just not necessarily the fastest overall if you pick a wide selection of games. But even then, it's like we're talking low single digit differences for the most part. So I don't really like to say that the 700X3D is hands down the best gaming CPU or the 14900K, because, you know, you can probably pick 10 games, cherry pick 10 games that'll favor the 14900KS or K quite easily, and then 10 games that'll favor the Ryzen processor, you know? So
yeah,
they're both good gaming CPUs, not embarrassing. Yeah, it does use a lot of power. And even when we remove the all-core power, if you just look at gaming power, it still uses a lot. Yeah, you can sort of improve the efficiency by, you know, using certain limits in the BIOS and undervolting and things like that. But we're talking about out of the box, because that's pretty much how we test CPUs and most other review outlets do. Did I answer your question or did I dodge it? I'm not sure.
I think you mostly answered it. I mean, I think it's like you see a lot of those sort of hot take things. It's like the social media hot take, isn't it? Like when someone says that the CPUs are like a joke or embarrassing mm-hmm. or whatever, it's like, yeah, it's not really like a fair representation. I think it has been impressive how, even though there has been points where Intel has stagnated, that they haven't had an FX moment, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's not like they've fallen that far behind. You know, they've refreshed the architecture a few times, and that's enough to keep them roughly around the mark in terms of performance, especially for gaming. And even like a 14900K is a pretty good productivity CPU as well. It's quite competitive with AMD's, you know, their 16-core models in some tasks. So, you know, there are plenty of reasons not to buy like a 14th gen processor. And I think that's reflected in what you see from the sales numbers, right? Where AMD is still pretty significantly ahead in most regions mm-hmm. in terms of CPU sales. People are preferring the better processor for a variety of reasons, whether that's value or platform longevity or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But yeah, like, I don't think the FX days, like, Intel will ever get to that level. Like, it would have to be disaster.
I hope not. I mean, look, it is slightly concerning the way things have been for a while now. I guess you can look at it in one light and go, well, performance is really competitive. So, you know, pricing is relatively competitive. Overall, they're pretty competitive. And I guess that's true. But at the same time, if you really look at it objectively, you take a step back, you don't care about the AMD Intel brands, which obviously we don't care about, and you just look at it, the 14th gen series and, you know, the Ryzen 7000 series. Like, if you're really honest with yourself, if you're building a computer from the ground up today or even doing a full platform upgrade, it's pretty hard to go 14th gen.
Yeah.
I just... Yeah, there's no real way around that. Like, it's you're much better investing in AM5, it would seem, at this point in time, because you do have that ability to upgrade in the future. Now, we don't know what that is. That could end up being a complete waste of time. Seems extremely unlikely that would be the case, but yeah, there's the possibility for that to be the case. Yep. So just the fact that you're getting a more power efficient platform, the price is much of a muchness, and it has an upgrade path, and it looks like it'll probably end up being a pretty solid upgrade path. Whether or not it'll be as great as AM4 was is yet to be seen. That's not necessarily my expectation, but the fact that you'll be able to upgrade to something, which will be Zen 5 in the not too distant future, that's kind of cool. So if you had to pull the trigger on one of them now, I would be going with AM5 just purely because of the upgrade path, and you're getting similar performance, better power efficiency, all the stuff we've already talked about. So, yeah, this is stuff we've known for quite some time now.
Yeah, I mean, Intel's just doing what they can based on the hardware that they've produced. Like, it takes a couple of years to get any CPUs out the door. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what they've got is what they've got. That's what they've got to put out. And yeah, you'd be hoping for some improved competition in the future. But, you know, Intel's still a company that's, it's not like they've suddenly lost heaps of market share or are suddenly right down the bottom in terms of revenue. They're still quite a dominant player in, like, your integrated systems, like pre-builts and those sort of things. Obviously, in laptops, they've still got quite a bit of market share. And I think Intel still at this point still gets the vast majority of laptop sales. So, you know, they're doing okay. It's just for these sort of like enthusiast applications, like top tier gaming, where people are doing lots and lots of research into what's the specific best product and the best value and things like that. Like, yeah, most people are probably going to buy an AMD CPU at the moment. And that, again, it's been reflected in the sales. But, you know, Intel's, yeah, they're still trading a fair bit on their long gained, I guess, reputation that they've had from many, many years. And again, it's like if you buy a pre-built system and it's got an Intel 14900K in it or whatever, it's not like you've been sold a dud. Like, it does work. And especially if you're buying that sort of system where you're unlikely to be doing upgrades because you're just buying an off-the-shelf Dell or whatever, like, you're getting good performance out of that system. And I think that's probably why they haven't gone as far down in like your pre-built sales and things as you would have seen if, let's say, and there were AMD CPUs were 20% faster across the board, then probably pre-builts would start to shift across. But yeah, that's just not the case. So yeah, they're doing fine for now. And I think there's some promise for future things, but yeah, we'll see how that goes, I guess.
Yeah. Well, we don't know what the future brings. Obviously, we know that, you know, Zen 5's not too far away. We don't exactly know how that's going to pan out for them, and then when the Intel competitor comes along. So that stuff will work out later in the year. But yeah, we definitely don't want a situation where AMD does become, you know, clearly dominant in terms of performance, because that's, you know, like right now, from my point of view, and it seems like yours, it's pretty difficult to recommend Intel as it stands, with performance being pretty well even across most areas. So if efficiency of performance goes even further, well, performance in particular goes in AMD's favor, I don't really want a situation where it's just buy AMD, ignore Intel completely, like what we had in reverse prior to 2017 for quite a few years, where it was just, I don't know, what would you recommend an FX processor for? They were pretty bad. So yeah, hopefully we don't have that situation, because it's always best. The industry is always most exciting and sort of best to be a part of when it's close competition. So that's what we want.
And you see that even in prices today, like, because the 14 and 14th gen series in general are reasonably okay in terms of performance levels, that, you know, AMD hasn't just cranked up those prices to crazy levels. They're still dropping prices across a lot of processors so you can get them at better deals as the year goes on. So that wouldn't be happening if they were in a super dominant position, because they'd just offer the part and then that's it. So yeah, you don't want to see monopolies form, which is always bad. And that's why we always want to see competition. I think it's probably time to talk about the next topic, which is, this one sort of came out of nowhere, something that I wasn't really expecting, because probably they just pushed it out, right? Was the AMD's announcement of FSR 3.1, which I think I made a video about a couple of days ago and is very much a much needed upgrade because I've been doing some testing recently on FSR, specifically at 1080p, where it's not very good. really, really not good. Doesn't work well. You'd certainly want to be using DLSS or another technique at 1080p. And there's always been this issue of like AMD, they just haven't updated it very often. Like they create the technology, then they push it out, and then they wait a long time to do anything with it. And that seemed to have been the case with FSR upscaling. They sort of released 2.2, I think it was 15 months ago or something. You're sort of twiddling your thumbs where you hear things like, oh, we keep saying that there's a few issues here. Like, are they gonna do anything? Are they gonna fix it? Are they gonna improve it? Is anything coming in the pipeline? And then, well, turns out I guess someone has been working on it. So yeah, I don't know whether you have any thoughts on it, whether you watched my video from yesterday, but yeah, I think that's probably at least a small step, we'll see how it goes, in the right direction.
Yeah, well, I watched your video, obviously a news video, so there's no testing of your own. So
yes,
makes it a lot less interesting in my opinion. I mean, it's great to know it's coming and, mm-hmm. Get some examples that they provided with their, I think you called them GIFs, I don't know why, but yeah, there was a couple of GIFs that I saw that
AMD. Yeah, GIFs.
No, yeah, the GIFs.
That's GIFs? Right.
Yeah, GIFs. I saw a couple of GIFs that AMD put together and looks good. I mean, obviously that's something they need to work on, and the better they can make FSR, naturally the better for everyone, the better for gamers at large, and better for the Radeon division to sell GPUs, because we can, if they nullify DLSS or at least get it close enough where it's not a key selling mm-hmm. feature of RTX GPUs, then there's ray tracing. That's sort of it. And even the frame generation, yeah. I think you said the frame generation technologies aren't wildly different. The main problem was that you were forced to use an inferior upscaling technology, which caused most of the problems.
Yeah. Yeah, it seemed like they had two issues with the frame generation side, that the upscaling component, which they're decoupling FSR from the frame generation. So the upscaling component from the frame generation component. So with FSR 3.1, you'll be able to use DLSS or XCSS upscaling or native resolution or whatever with frame generation, which I think is a really good move. Mm-hmm. That will allow, just much better options and configurations for people across a wide variety of games. Because I think I've said in some situations that AMD owners should probably be using XCSS instead of FSR. Mm. So if there's games where, they're able to get better quality out of a different technique, then at least you'll have some reason to use FSR 3.1. I think that will help integration as well, because then developers will be incentivized to say, integrate FSR 3.1, so that even if NVIDIA owners are still going to use DLSS upscaling, which they should probably also integrate into the game, there'll be that incentive to put in FSR 3, because then the frame generation component will be widely applicable. People, the effort will be justified, because NVIDIA owners won't just be ignoring it to use DLSS. They'll be, if you've got a 30 series product, the frame gen solution will be FSR 3.1 frame generation plus maybe DLSS upscaling. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a really big thing for NVIDIA GeForce owners that don't have 40 series products. So again, it's kind of that weird situation where AMD solves a problem for their competitors a little bit. Mm-hmm. But that was really good news to see. But it's hard to make any definitive conclusions about quality and things like that based on AMD samples. I think it was good that they showed an example of a game where, in my opinion, FSR is very bad. So Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart is one of the worst examples for FSR. I've tested, 30 plus games in upscaling at this point, like looking at it very, very closely. And yeah, Ratchet and Clank's probably like bottom couple of games. So if they can take that implementation, which is trash, and make it look good, then I think that's probably going to be pretty promising for other games. But yeah, like again, the integrations differ so much between different games that there could be that sort of situation happening again with 3.1. Like you see some games where it just doesn't work well, some games where it works really well, and there'll be a mixture there. But yeah, I mean, I think when it comes to like nullifying DLSS and things like that, I'm pretty sure we've talked about this in the past, but I think they've lost the battle of trying to make it so the developers only integrate one technique. Mm-hmm. So they integrate only FSR and then they don't integrate DLSS. I think that ship has sailed now. And it's very much about they need to be making a solution that works the best for their owners, their GPU owners, and then hoping that developers will put in the effort to integrate all the different technologies, which I think most developers are willing to do at this moment. They've most games coming out today, you know, have a wide selection of upscalers, and once developers put in a few upscalers, typically the next game that they make has all of them as well. So yeah, I don't think that they'll be able to make it so FSR deletes DLSS from games. But yeah, I mean, the quality is, yeah, it's been something that's been complained about for quite a while across many different users, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I think I was also going to say, I think I mentioned a while back, like I was like, there's two issues with FSR frame generation. And then I just completely ignored talking about the second one, which was frame pacing issues, which seems to be still dicey depending on the game. Mm-hmm. I think they just added FSR 3 frame gen to The Last of Us Part 1, and that was having some issues with frame pacing and stuff. So provided that they can over time, you know, work their magic a little bit and fix that up, then yeah, that'll be a really compelling solution for people. But yeah, again, we'll see how this goes. But yeah, the fact they didn't update it for 15 months, I don't know, did that surprise you, or does that sound like something that AMD would probably do?
I don't know,
Tim. Am I getting you into trouble with this question?
Well, yeah, I mean, it probably doesn't surprise me, to be honest. That's probably something AMD would do. Look, they announced FSR and took a very long time to get it out. So based on that, was the expectation that sort of hit the ground running and there'd be regular updates and it'd be a well-oiled machine? I don't think that would have been my guess. I don't think that would have been my guess if you had have asked me 15 months ago.
But yeah, I'm keen to go back and eventually check out FSR 3.1 when it comes out, do an analysis. Hopefully there'll be a few games that it comes in so that we don't have just one example, because that can at times bring out some potentially misleading conclusions. But at the very least, like, yeah, we'll see what it has in store. And then, yeah, we'll probably have to check out things like their driver-based frame generation again, see how that's improved. FSR 3 frame generation again, see whether they've fixed the frame pacing issues and things like that. But I can't imagine I'll be getting to those anytime soon. So we'll just have to let them sit for a little bit there.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk about Steam family sharing. This is a sort of a follow-up to something that we talked about a while ago when we kind of trash-talked the Epic Game Store for a while and when we talked about how bad it is. Because I think one of the things that we brought up when talking about the Epic Game Store and Steam was that one of the issues with Steam was their library sharing functionality, and how if you share your library with another person and you're playing a game and another person tries and plays a game, they will kick you out of the game or they won't be able to run any games at all. It doesn't matter if it's not the same game that you're trying to run.
Mm-hmm.
Only one person can use a library at a time. Mm-hmm. Well, it seems like Valve has sort of listened to that. I guess they specifically listened to our podcast and are like, let's fix that right away because we're that influential, right?
No other explanation. That makes
perfect
sense.
There's no other explanation. So they have created something called Steam Families, which is available in the latest Steam beta client, which I think is a very good move. The main change here is that it's basically like family sharing that we've had previously, except now people who are members of your family can access games in your library while another person's using the library, provided both people aren't trying to play the same game.
Okay.
So the example that they give was things like if you're playing Half-Life and another person wants to play Portal 2 and you own both copies of that game, each person will be able to play those games, which I think is a pretty big move that is very, very beneficial as people's Steam libraries start to grow, because that means there's more and more chances that someone wants to play a game in your library. But then it doesn't make a whole lot of sense if you own like 400 games and you play one and the other 399 are just like completely unusable.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, my thoughts are initially pretty self-centered, and this could save me a significant amount of money so I don't have to buy every new release that's like $100 twice.
That's right. You do that, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, it's a business expense, so it's not so bad, but yeah. It is still technically my money. So yeah, that'll be nice personally. Also, you know, I have kids. They like to game, and every now and then I buy a game and Zoe wants to play it, and then I have to go buy it for her or whatever if she's, you know, well, there's some certain agreements that happen there. But, yeah, it's annoying. So we've tried the Steam family sharing thing before, but, yeah, that just doesn't work out because then I've got to do some testing or something and then she can't play Hogwarts Legacy or whatever it is that she wants to borrow off my account. So that's, yeah, it's very cool. So there's up to five people can be what within a family. So five accounts can have access to, say, your library. But how many? Yep. So is it just two people can be gaming at the same time, or five different games at the same time?
It looks to be, now I haven't actually tested this feature yet, so I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. Plus, do I have five accounts I could test it with? Probably not. But I believe it's that, yeah, any one of the members can access any of the games in that library at the same time. So it's not limited to two or something. But again, they've got like an FAQ here, and I couldn't see if there was like a specific limit or something on the number of games that could be used at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's more just like, everyone in the family ends up sharing their libraries together, and then, you know, depending on how many copies of each game own and stuff, you could basically just play as many games as you want, provided that there's enough licenses to play those games. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you had a library of, let's say there were five people in the library, but then you wanted to both people to play Call of Duty, so long as you had two licenses of that somewhere, you could both play Call of Duty at the same time.
Wow, okay, that's
but
very
then if
cool.
there was like a third member that wanted to play, then they would have to buy a third license that would come into that library. There are some limitations, though, which I was reading. One of them is that the family members must be from the same country. So you can't just go and make a library and then be like, hey, online friend from another country that is not technically part of my family, here, have access to games. Because I'm imagining what they're trying to do there is prevent people loading up a games library with cheaper games in one of those countries that offers cheap games, like Turkey or Argentina or wherever, mm-hmm. and then just sharing that with people in the countries where, you know, games are more expensive. Mm-hmm. So then you just get access to all that. So that's not allowed. And also there's a few caveats here, things like developers can opt out of the system. So for all developers that were originally supporting family sharing, which was the original version of this, they will automatically be part of this new Steam family system. Mm-hmm. But a developer could choose if they wanted to say, no, you're not allowed to use my games in this. So if there was a particularly greedy developer that was like, well, we'd rather not have, you know, families share around games like this, and we'd rather have everyone buy a separate copy of the game, like I'm sure a company that comes to mind, EA, for example, mm-hmm. Would probably... yeah, opt out of something like this. But we'll see how that goes, because it's obviously
Definitely up in the air. Gamers should definitely look to boycott such publishers, for sure.
Oh, yeah. I think there'll be some backlash if it was discovered that it was like, because there's no benefit to gamers for preventing you from using this feature. It's something that just makes sense, because back in the days of disc-based games, especially outside of PC, because PC has been licensed for a while, but you know, the old console days, you just share your cartridge or disc with a mate. They just shove it in their console and just work straight away. There's no BS about like, oh, but, you know, do you also have a PlayStation, and are you playing a game on your PlayStation at the same time? It's like, no. You give the physical game to someone else and they can play it. And I think this is, as we move into a digital age, right, you need an equivalent of that.
Yeah.
If I've got 400 licenses that I've spent, I don't know what I would have spent on my Steam library by now, thousands upon thousands of dollars. It seems fair that I should be able to say to my sister or someone who games, like, hey, you know, here's this cool game that I, you know, just played. Hey, when I'm finished with it, you should check it out. Here's my, you know, I spent my hard-earned money on it. Here you go. Mm-hmm. Have a copy of it.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. This is, well, I'm keen to check this out. I'll probably check this out later today, actually. But this is probably some of the more exciting news I've heard in the PC space over the last, well, certainly this year. This is something that's needed to happen. I mean, like you said, we talked about it in a podcast, saying that this was probably the biggest limitation, the most frustrating thing about Steam and just, yes, I guess, the gaming space in general. So it needed to happen. And yeah, I guess once I had a family, I've got a couple of kids now, that's when this was the most frustrating, because they've all got Steam accounts and, you know, mm-hmm. there'll be a game they want to play. And it's the worst thing about kids as well, up to sort of this age, that, you know, they like playing, how do I put this? They like dabbling with gaming. Like, you know, they'll play Halo for a little bit and then they'll jump over to like Jurassic World or something like that. And they'll play just a variety of games, whereas adults tend to like get a game and play them right out or finish them, if the game's good, of course. And that's the other thing, like, I mean, I'm generalizing here, but most adults sort of, because it's their hard-earned money, they'll try and research, you know, is this game actually any good? They'll read some reviews and that. Whereas, you know, a kid sees one trailer or whatever and they have to have it. Their whole life depends on getting that one game that's probably going to be absolute garbage as they play for 5 minutes and they're like, well, I don't want that anymore. There is the refund policy, yeah. I suppose, on Steam, but anyway.
Yeah, I think the only concerning thing that I read about this policy was something in the FAQ that they mentioned, which was what they had this question here. What happens if my brother gets banned for cheating while playing my game? And it says, if a family member gets banned for cheating while playing your copy of a game, you, the game owner, will also be banned in that game. Other family members are not impacted.
I mean, I don't have a problem with that. That's fine.
That's not ideal, though. You really do have to pick and choose your family members carefully, because
to anything, right?
Well, that's true, but like, I guess if I go back to like the disc-based example, if I share my copy of Call of Duty on Xbox 360 with my mate, and he gets banned being an idiot in that game, then I'm not banned. He can just give the game back, and I can play it, and that I'm fine. Whereas with this Steam option, if I did that and he went around using cheats and got himself banned, then I'd be banned. So that kind of sucks for me. So I just have to like make sure that I don't share my library with someone that's going to be, you know, acting like a bit of a goober online with some of these things.
Yeah,
so,
I mean, I don't really have a problem with that one. I see the concern for sure, but yeah, I mean, you know, it's like if you lend your car to someone and they speed, then, you know, you've got to prove to the police that you weren't driving the car. And this is a more extreme real world example. There are ways around that, I suppose, whereas you're saying in this example, there really isn't, because it's pretty difficult to prove that you weren't the one cheating. But anyway, I mean, just don't cheat in games.
Yeah, that's right.
Solution to that one, get good.
Yeah, I think one of the things they could do to potentially mitigate that is that currently the way that it works, it seems like you have to share your entire library. So anyone that's part of your family gets access to all the games. So you can't just be like, have these couple of games that I'm sharing, it's everything. I think if there was a way to maybe share your whole library, but then you say maybe not this game or maybe not that game, just if you're worried about cheating, so you could just go, hey, you can have access to any of my games, but hey, I really don't want you to get banned playing Call of Duty or Battlefield or whatever, so I'm not going to share that one, but have access to all the rest. That's probably a way they could prevent that. But
yeah, maybe. I mean, I feel like if that's a concern, you just don't share your library, to be honest.
That's probably true. It's probably a case as well where it's like if you were accessing someone else's game and you got both people banned, you're probably going to lose access to the family sharing solution. Mm. So
yeah, it's kind of a one-time, well, you'd hope it would be a one-time deal. Yeah, you wouldn't want to make that mistake twice.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, it's something to be aware of, but yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and also another thing was that you can't chop and change families. So you can leave a family whenever you want to, but you'll need to wait 1 year to join the previous family or create or join a new family.
Well,
so that's probably stopping abuse as well. You can't just be like mixing up your libraries between your mates and just changing around them. It's got sort of like a decision, kind of like when you buy like a YouTube premium subscription, there's like the family option where you can sign up all your different, you know, family members to the one plan. You save a little bit of money, right? But then, you know, they don't want people just randomly going and changing different accounts all the time. It's kind of, it is meant for genuine families. Like they're making this with the intention of it being immediate family members, not just all your random mates coming together and you just trying to avoid everyone buying games. So
I'm
keen for this.
I don't have a problem with that limitation. I think it's, again, good to know about that limitation.
Yes.
So you can choose wisely without having that sort of 12-month period where you have to wait the cooling off period. But yeah, I mean, it's designed for family or very close friends, I suppose. Because, you know, not everyone has five family members that, you know, will be playing on Steam. So you might.
Or deserve to be using my games.
Well. I'm not going to touch that one. I won't get involved with your family Steam battles. But yeah, anyway, it's very exciting feature. I'm very keen to test this out. I have a heap of work to do the second we stop talking, but I think I'm going to try and get this beta version and give it a whirl because, yeah, it seems pretty cool. At the very least, test it between my test systems. Because at the moment, I've got two different Steam accounts, two different, you know, Ubisoft accounts, EA, but the Steam is the platform I primarily use. 90-something% of my games are there. So
It'd be interesting to see how it works with DRM as well, like some of those games where you've only got 5 activations per 24 hours. Like, is it 5 activations per account that's shared, or is it 5 activations per license? That'll be interesting to find out.
So, yeah. And that could be one of the reasons why it's up to 5 people, because possibly a lot of them are 5 hardware changes. So, yeah, 5 people within a 24-hour period can log into a game and not have an account get locked out. But the 6th attempt would get locked out. It wouldn't lock out all the other accounts, though. With most of them, it doesn't fully lock the account. Some it does. But most of them, it just locks out the 6th hardware change. So any of the previous 5 hardware configurations can still play the game within that 24-hour period till it's reset.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. So I'd imagine that would be how it works. I thought it was interesting as well that Tim Sweeney, the head of Epic Games, tweeted about this, sort of praising the competition in the market at the moment, saying Steam raises the bar with great new family sharing features, store competition on PC and Mac benefits everyone. So obviously Epic Games is having a lot of battles at the moment, especially up against Apple trying to get the Epic Games Store on iOS devices. But I thought it was interesting that he's sort of saying that store competition is a thing that drove this feature. I'm not convinced that having things like the Epic Games Store made Steam feel compelled to introduce this feature, because I think Steam is so dominant that they're really just trying to compete with themselves and get better and better. And that's something I think Steam's been really good at, is despite the fact that they are ubiquitous, like everyone on PC has Steam as most likely the primary platform that they use to play and purchase games. Mm-hmm. Despite the fact that that's the case, they haven't just sat around and been like, okay, well, we can just make our store trash and not update it. They seem to be constantly on the forefront of new features. And I don't think it's competition from Epic Games or Uplay or whatever it is, an EA store. It's the fact that they genuinely care about making Steam as good as possible, which is probably why it's so popular at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously just a bit of self-promotion, isn't it?
A bit of that, isn't it? Yeah.
It's like if Gamers Nexus reviews like a custom 7900 Jari card tomorrow, we retweet it going, great to see Gamers Nexus reviewing this product that we've also reviewed, and you can find our review here. Like, that would just be a bit weird. And that's essentially what he's doing, right? So
yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so.
But I'm doing that to Gamers Nexus, so be warned, Steve. Next time you review anything that we may have reviewed something similar, even if it's a graphics card, we'll be like,
you'll do the self-promotion thing.
Yeah. Harbor Unbox reviewed a graphics card just last week, like Gamers Nexus is doing today.
I really love seeing other reviewers review these products, just like we did previously, which you can check out via the link here, and we won't link to the original content.
Yep, that's definitely...
Yeah, that'll be good.
That's pretty much what our X account's going to be now.
Yeah, nice. All right, I want to talk as well this week about the fact that I've been burning in an OLED monitor on purpose. So this has started I started actually a month ago, pretty much as soon as I finished testing the MSI 321 URX. I was like, we need some good data on how long OLED monitors last for productivity work. So I took out my LCD, I swapped it in, I put in my QD OLED, changed absolutely nothing about the setup, and now I'm just using it as I used my LCD. And it's been... You would have seen the video on Monitors Unboxed talking about this more in depth, about the test setup, like the specific configuration I've been using, how I'm using it.
Are you talking about me or the listener?
Just the listener. I don't expect you to have watched my monitor videos, because I know you fall asleep.
Guess what? I did watch it in its entirety. Nice. And I any questions, I am here to answer, of course.
Okay. Cool. Nice. So, yeah, I think it's been interesting. Just a few additional things about that. It was... sort of, I remember the first couple of weeks of deliberately burning in the monitor, and it was sort of like just thinking constantly in the back of my head, being like, this is not like I walk away, I just leave the screen on and stuff. And I'm like, damn, this is really not good. Like, I definitely try and avoid this on all the other systems with OLEDs that I've ever used. And like, I just come back and I'm like, oh, it's still there. It's kind of burning in. But then I'm like, oh, wait, that's right. I'm doing it on purpose. So
it's like the Tim burn-in test. It's like you're cringing massively every time you walk away from it, leaving it there static.
That's pretty much right. Like, while we're filming this podcast on my podcast PC, it's currently just showing static stuff, which I definitely would normally like turn the monitor off. I think on my gaming PC, which uses an OLED, I've got it set to turn off after like 3 minutes or something, so it would never burn in. But yeah, it's... that was kind of awkward for a little bit, but now it's more just sort of getting into the swing of, yeah, this is very much just like using an LCD, really. Like, it's not all that different. Mm-hmm. I've sort of gotten over the whole, yeah, we'll see how it goes with burn-in. And yeah, I think you'll see a few updates on the channel as it goes. I'm not sure whether I'll do the updates every month because I'm not expecting there to be like heaps of changes from like this month to next month. Maybe I'll make the every month updates because I'll have to take the imagery every month just to make sure. Mm-hmm. But I think maybe I'll make that like a Patreon float plan exclusive little video that you can watch to see it every month. And there'll be major updates on Monitors Unboxed or something. But yeah, I'm not sure how long it's going to take to burn in. It could be a month, it could be 6 months, it could be a year. But yeah, what I'm interested in asking you though is if it turns out that I've got this monitor, which is 4K, 240 hertz, looks nice, great text quality, great for video editing, and it turns out it doesn't burn in for like 3 years, do you reckon that would change your mind about your productivity setup with your LCDs? Would you consider getting an OLED in that situation?
Yeah, I would definitely look to be going OLED in that situation.
Because of the 240 hertz or any other specific aspect of it?
I know it's not hugely beneficial, but occasionally I do, you know, some gaming. Like it's mixed. It's predominantly video. Well, I don't even do video editing anymore. I can't really even claim that, can I? I'm pretty well.
Excel spreadsheeting?
Yeah, I'm pretty well useless now on the computer. I mean, I pay bail and do all the hard stuff. Now, look, I'm mostly on my PC now, Excel, Google Docs, email, and then like YouTube videos or maybe, you know, some right, sort of like, yep. You know, streaming media, whether it's, you know, sports or whatever.
And so you could get like a Chromebook and do that, theoretically.
No, Tim, I need my 3 4K 32-inch monitors. Come on now. Yeah, I'm not doing anything. Occasionally I will game at it, but, you know, I do have a dedicated gaming PC because I'm a privileged YouTuber.
Of course.
So, but would I go OLED anyway? Yeah, I mean, sure, I definitely entertain the idea. I'm happy with the LCD screens I have, but again, this sounds, I don't even know what this, I'm just going to say it. Like occasionally I'll watch something and I'll be like, oh, that's slightly gray. I wish that was like, I wish that wasn't slightly gray.
So what you're saying is that you would pay, I think it would cost you about $6,000 Australian to buy 3 4K OLED monitors. Yeah, you would pay $6,000 of your money to make the grays a bit blacker.
Yeah, I should probably just stop talking. Frankly, you set me up on this one. I didn't know how to
You just immediately said yes and now you're regretting it? Is that what's happened?
I mean, I wanted to give you something. I didn't want to just sit here mumbling and fumbling away being like, maybe I would. I'm just saying sometimes I'll watch a show while I'm benchmarking. It's a show that I'm really into. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think more recently it was like, you know, season 2 of Reacher and I was like, ooh, that's a little grayer and more washed out than I would like on my high-end IPS panel. Maybe I should have watched this on my LG TV. Yeah.
Well, you've mentioned before that you're kind of, even though you don't test monitors, you're kind of a display snob.
You've
bought very expensive monitors in the past and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I get it.
Well, yeah. And again, I've been able to justify that though because, so I think I told you, I've mentioned it before, it was the Dell 30-inch, what was the resolution? 2560 by 1600, I believe. Like the
back in the day.
Yeah, I forget the model number now, but they were very expensive. They were very, very expensive back then. Adjusting for inflation now, they're probably worth $1 million. But I had three of those. I think it cost me about $7,000 or $8,000 for those three. You can see them on, I did a triple monitor gaming benchmark on TechSpot back in the day. So if you Google triple monitors TechSpot, you'll probably see my setup that I used to have. And it was great. But the reason I'm telling you this story is because I've still got those monitors. I've still got all three of them. They still work. They weigh a ton. They probably use more power than I'd care to realize. They're in my shed, all stacked up, taking up a ton of room because I can't bring myself to throw out what, which was once like, I don't know, $7,000 or $8,000 Australian worth of monitors. But the point is they still work pretty much as well as the day I got them. and they must be 15, 16 years old. Yeah,
a long time ago.
Yeah, yep. Maybe even older than that. You'd have to – I think it was like the – I'm trying to Google it now. I don't remember the – yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I can't find it. I might have even been 32-inch. It was 30-inch, 32-inch. But the whole point of this is I still have them. So if I was to invest a similar amount of money on more modern OLED panels, knowing that they should last 3 years, that's not that long. For example, the current monitors that I have would be about 3 years old now, and I have no intention of replacing them. So 3 years, if I was to pay for them.
Yeah, it's not very long.
Yeah, if I was to pay for them out of my own money. So I'm answering this question again. So but we're circling back to the start. That's how drawn out this is, Tim.
Sure.
Maybe the answer's no, because I'd probably want like 6 years out of
I think that's fair.
Monitors. Yep. 3 years isn't very long. It's not a graphics card. Like a three-year-old monitor still should work really well and not be in need of replacement. So,
well, what you'd want is for it to burn in inside 3 years, so then you can get a complete replacement because of the burn-in warranty.
Yeah,
and then maybe they'll last you 6 years.
Yeah, that seems like sort of work that I'm not super interested in. Oh, I found it.
Just an RMA process?
I found it. So I had the model. I think this was actually it. It's the 3007 or 3007 WFP30-inch. So that was the...
Wow, they have not changed model names in any way since 15 years ago, because that's another shocker.
I mean, they might have got worse, but yeah, that's not great. But anyway, that was the... I think
that was it.
I might have had the 3008 model, because I really want to get the exact. Yeah, I had the Dell 3008 WFP. That was the exact models I ran.
Nice.
And like I said, if you go to TechSpot Triple Monitor Gaming, you'll almost certainly find that content. They were $2,000 US each. So I didn't.
Ouch. What refresh rate? Were they 60 hertz monitors back then? They would have had to be, right?
They were 60 hertz IPS, yep.
Early LCD days. Jeez.
They looked very, very, very good. I think you can buy them now, refurbished for like $250. Probably don't recommend that.
You could definitely get a brand new high refresh rate monitor for for less than that. But anyway, before talking about our off topic, your fishing trip updates and stuff like that, I just wanted to ask you some quick questions about two games that have just come out recently and whether you're planning on testing them, just to give people, I guess, an update on what's happening in the channel coming up. So we've had the release of Horizon Forbidden West on PC, the very latest. Obviously, Horizon Zero Dawn came out on PC a while back. This is the new version, the PS5 port to PC that's just come out. Apparently, it runs quite well from what I understand. And then the opposite of that in terms of running well is Dragon's Dogma 2, which apparently runs like us.
Okay.
So especially CPU performance in the city area seems to be quite bad in Dragon's Dogma 2 from what I gather, and it's getting good reviews. I don't know. So are you planning on any coverage on those games or just leaving it to other people who I believe have tested some aspects of it at this point?
Yeah, look, because I was away, timing wasn't great for these titles. I have purchased and loaded Horizon Forbidden West. Does look amazing. Yep. I've only checked it on a 4090 at 4K, so most modern games look pretty good. So yeah, haven't dug into that one. Obviously, I'll be adding it to the big benchmarks, which I'll probably have a couple of those coming up over the next few weeks or next month.
Yep.
So yeah, whether I'll do anything specifically with that, probably not. So neither of those games I'll be doing a dedicated video for.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just because of the timing and being away on holidays and whatnot. But they'll probably, both of them will get added to the big battery of benchmarks. And
yeah, I think Dragon's Dogma 2 is going to be a good CPU testing game.
I've heard it's very CPU limited, but I haven't. Again, yeah, I've only.
I think
just
it's interesting. I think it's interesting as well because it uses the RE engine, from what I understand. So it's not like an Unreal Engine 5 CPU limited game or something like that. It's kind of a weird scenario where the RE engine that usually runs pretty well in games like Resident Evil is being used for this open world title and seems to have some performance issues. So That could be one. But again, by the time you put it into a CPU comparison, they might have fixed performance and things like that and improved it a little bit. So yeah, we'll see how that goes. But I'm sure people, the reason why I wanted to just bring that up briefly is I'm sure people would have been wondering, hey, are you going to be, you know, doing videos on that? But yeah, obviously you've been away. You've been doing some much more important things. So let's take a break and we'll talk about your big fishing trip. Hi, Steve, we're back. I want the updates. Well, actually, first of all, the generator, is it installed?
What's the generator updates? The problem with the generator was my holiday. So they couldn't they couldn't really install it while I was away. It is scheduled to be installed, well, at least delivered early next week. I haven't got a concrete date. So basically, by the next podcast, if I don't at least have the generator that I've now paid for in full delivered, I'll be starting to get pretty annoyed. Look, in their defense, it would have likely been delivered last week, or it should have been. But again, I was away for a week and a half, almost 2 weeks. So that blocked out the generator getting delivered. So hopefully early next week, and then maybe it'll be it's only supposed to be, well, they reckon the day it gets delivered, they'll hook it all up and have it running. So could be Monday or Tuesday next week. But yeah, as I said, if it's not done by the next podcast, I'm going to start getting a little bit annoyed because I've paid for a good portion of it now.
What about your holiday? What happened? Anything interesting?
The holiday was great. Definitely one of the better holidays I've taken in quite a long time. I mean, this holiday is the same holiday I do every year. It's sort of the boys' trip, though I did take my family as well this time. And it was great. The weather was pretty good. It's northern New South Wales. If you were going up there to sort of go to the beach, do that sort of stuff, it was really good weather. But if you're going out into the ocean on a kayak, it was less than ideal a lot of the time. We had probably only two good days. Some of the days we went out, it was a bit miserable. The swells were very big pretty much the entire time we were there, but just choppy conditions. You know, it was a bit of a washing machine out there, which makes it a little bit unenjoyable. There's certainly been years gone by that it was amazing. I had one year where we got about 3 days where it was like a glass off, so it was just amazing.
Oh yeah, nice.
Mixed conditions for sure. Got some good fish. I caught a big spotted mackerel that was about 105 centimeters long and roughly 10 kilograms. So
is that good for fishing? I don't know anything about is that like one of those pictures of people showing, they're like, hey, I caught this big fish.
Did you not see it in the BTS section, Tim?
Yeah, but I don't know if it's a big fish or not. Big for that fish, or is it just...
They don't get too much bigger than that. Like, you'd have to get to a Spanish mackerel to get to, like, the 15-kilo ones. It was big. It nearly ripped my arms off about four times. It had some big runs on it. I was pretty happy to... Once I'd landed on the kayak and humanely dispatched of it, I was pretty chuffed because I wasn't sure we were going to get it. The hooks weren't set great. And yeah, those things, it's like, I don't know, it's like imagine hooking a fishing rod to a car and then having it drive off really quickly. Like it's pretty impressive how they pull. So that was a lot of fun. And we took that back, filleted it up, and it took us about six of us, and it took three efforts to eat all of it. So there was plenty of fish there. Okay. Yeah, it's very, very tasty. Caught a couple of really big tuna as well and some other stuff like that. So yeah, it wasn't exactly a failed trip, that's for sure. It was a lot of fun, but just mixed conditions for doing the kind of ocean-based kayak fishing that we like to do. But on land, the weather was good. We had a swimming pool at the place we stayed at, so that was great. And yeah, had some nice meals and just relaxed. So certainly can't complain. I didn't read about no 14900KS or new upscaling technology, nothing like that. So basically didn't really use computers or technology almost the entire time. I watched your stuff while we were driving back in the car. So obviously I wasn't driving, but we shared the driving load because we just do it in one big go. It's like a 15-hour drive. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and probably a good time of year to take the break as well. I mean,
nothing's happening at the moment, really.
Yeah, there's been sort of past years because we take, as you know, the boys' trip. We take it the same, roughly the same time every year. around March. And there's been years where it's been a bit dicey. I think some reviews I've had to tackle once I've got back. So it was kind of nice coming back and just being like, cool, this was pretty well how I left it.
So, yeah, that's right. I mean, yeah, I think was this one of the years previously? Was that the year when YouTube like shadow banned us from the platform? Was that trip a few years ago?
That was the family holiday. So,
right.
Which is one of the reasons why I took the family on this holiday, because you know, the girls just had to jump out of school, but it's only primary school. They're doing quite well, so not a big deal. And we did a holiday, a family holiday late last year, and it was okay, not amazing. You know, the girls didn't like it as much as we probably hoped they would. So we took them on this one. They absolutely loved it. So that may have ruined the boys' trip moving forward. Not that it was a problem. It was kind of nice having them there. But yeah, no, we've had I think going back to what you were talking about, we tried the family holiday at a certain destination. It was the last time we actually did camping, and that was a disaster. We got washed out, and it didn't work out that well. Which can happen with camping, but when you got toddlers, it's less than ideal. Then the next time we went back to that destination that we like, YouTube basically shadow banned our account. That was
fun.
Yeah, I mean, fun's a word. Extremely stressful and less than desirable is another way of putting it, mildly. So that sucked. And then the time after that we tried was when we just come out of COVID lockdown nonsense. And the girls managed to contract COVID. And so the day we got there, they came down with the symptoms. We tested them. They had COVID. And then my wife and I got it the next day, and you know, you weren't allowed to obviously go outside or do anything, so we just had to drive home. So that holiday was ruined.
Yep.
We've been battling on the family holidays. But anyway, this was a successful one. It wasn't even a planned family holiday. We sort of made it one at the last minute because I always hire a really big house, and we've always got spare rooms and stuff like that. So I thought, well, we might as well just bring the kids, right? So we did. Worked out well.
Cool.
And I got back and I thought, gee, I'm going to have to mow the lawns. It's been almost 2 weeks now and it's all dead. So that's saved
me a job. I haven't mowed my lawn this year. Not once.
Oh, well, yeah, well, it's a lot drier over your side.
Yeah.
We've been getting regular rain up until probably 3 or 4 weeks ago. And yeah, lawn is dead now. So.
Oh, no, I would have mowed my lawn once, but that would have been back in January. We haven't had any rain, maybe a couple of millimeters in the past 2 months. So there's just no way the grass has grown really at all.
Yeah, we've had a lot of rain, but up until, like I said, 3 or 4 weeks ago where we've had little to no rain. So anyway, got back.
No mowing.
So that was a bit disappointing. no mowing stories.
Yeah, no mower chat.
I guess I should do some mower maintenance. Take the time to do that. Right now, though, I'm catching up on benchmarks, so. I should probably prioritize.
Yeah,
that.
That's right. Bit of work to do at the moment, unfortunately. It's good. I've got like a huge backlog of monitor stuff to get to, so I'll be getting to that. Yeah, what have I been up to? One game that I want to talk about. I played a game called Pacific Drive, which I saw over on SkillUp's channel, fellow Aussie YouTuber who does game reviews, SkillUp. I'm sure few people are familiar with his channel. I don't watch a ton of his videos or anything, but there was sort of this game that I'd heard a few things about and I'd sort of seen a few like videos and screenshots of it. I'm like, okay, that looks interesting, but I wasn't sold on getting it. So I'm just like, we'll see. But I watched his review of this game called Pacific Drive and I was like, that sounds pretty cool. I'll give it a try. And so I played that most of the week while you were on holiday. And I thought it was pretty good. Probably I wasn't quite as positive on it as SkillUp was, but I think it's probably a game that is worth playing. So it's basically a game where you should really just watch his review, to be honest. It kind of explains mostly what the game is about, but it's kind of like a driving simulator plus not really a horror game, but basically you've got this like car that you're trying to maintain as the game goes. You need to go out into this weird zone sort of system where you go on runs with your car to get resources to either fix your car from the issues that you encounter on the run or upgraded. And it's very, there's a lot of like things that seem tedious on the surface, things like you have to refill the car and recharge its battery and replace panels on it and upgrade it. And there's a lot of like just hitting buttons and this very complicated upgrade system. But I found over time playing it that a lot of those things were quite fun. Like there's extensive upgrades that, and a lot of the upgrades genuinely make the game better to play. So there is sort of like a fairly loose story where you're trying to get into the more dangerous parts of the zone the further into the map that you go over time. So it gets more and more risky to do these runs. Your car is fairly crap, so it's, you know, it's slow to begin with. It's got very bad armor. There's no abilities and things, but then over time you can add in like scanners and special panels and defensive mechanisms and things like that. And then you'll go back and after each run, come back to the garage, do your car maintenance and fix things up and go on more runs. And yeah, it's just, it's quite nice, compelling gameplay. Sort of at times I can find games like that a little tedious if there's sort of like just a few mechanics that you're repeating a lot. But I think the variety in the game was quite good in terms of its mechanics. And I liked the upgrade system where the upgrades matter. It's not like you can go on runs and just fluke it with a dodgy, unupgraded car. As soon as you get to sort of the higher levels, yeah, it's unlikely you'll get very far if you've got bad upgrades. And yeah, the upgrade system I thought was quite good. So I would certainly recommend it. Probably not like a must play super strong recommendation. The one downside to the game is that when you're on a run in between zones, so a run might be three or four different zones that you'll get to. If you're in a zone, you can't save the game. You have to get to either your garage or the next zone before it saves. So that could be 20 minutes of gameplay without saving. So if you're very busy and you maybe only play games briefly and you need to pause and go away and do something immediately, yeah, there's the chance of losing progress there. For me, I thought that was going to be a big deal when I was playing it, but it didn't end up having much of an effect at all. Because I just ended up being able to finish most of the runs. And
you have a job or anything,
I do have a job, but I was playing mostly at night when it's not like a big issue. Mm-hmm. I just go to bed when I'm finished. But for some people that, you know, they only have like a couple of, maybe they have 10 minutes or 15 minutes before they get interrupted playing, then you would just have to leave your PC running basically until you can get back to it. So that's not ideal, but the rest of the game I thought was pretty good. So yeah, I probably recommend that. And yeah, not much else has been happening really around here. Just typical work stuff.
Just working and gaming. You're living the life.
Yeah, pretty much. The AFL season's back on at the moment, that's nice. It just started with round one for at least my team was last week and they lost, so that was disappointing. But they play tonight, Friday night, so I'll be watching that, mm-hmm. seeing how they go. And yeah, I'm not sure how the season will go, but it's, yeah, good to get the AFL back, something that's pretty consistent. I like watching every week. So we'll see. Do you reckon Adelaide or Melbourne will finish higher this year on the ladder?
Oh, Melbourne for sure.
That's what I would have thought.
Yeah.
Melbourne's most likely to finish above.
I do like the Crows and I'll be watching tonight. Be interested how they go against Geelong, but yeah, I'll be barracking for the Crows tonight. It's
nice.
As we speak right now, it's about five and a half hours away. So yeah, should be good.
But yeah, that's my evening sorted.
Yep. Now I did watch the games while I was away. We had just enough internet for KO to stream it. Fairly low bitrate 1080p.
Oh,
But yeah, it was good. I'm enjoying it. So yeah, we'll see. No idea who's going to win it this season.
No, but yeah, seems pretty open, but yep. Tends to be that way early in the season. I'm sure we'll get a bit more. Well, I guess most of that's because the top teams from last year have done quite badly to start the year. Well, so
yeah, quite badly is putting it mildly. Collingwood's have lost the first three and they're
trash now.
They'll probably lose the next one as well. So they'll find themselves close to the bottom of the ladder, which is kind of...
Who do they play next week?
I think they play Brisbane.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they got Brisbane.
Grand final rematch.
Yeah, grand final rematch.
Interesting.
Well, Brisbane hasn't been doing great either. I think they're probably in better form. But anyway, that'll...
Cool. Well, I'm interested to see how that goes. I'm sure in this podcast we'll be talking about our niche Australian sport as we go, even though most people don't even know what Australian rules football is.
Doesn't matter. Learn.
Yeah, well, go watch some highlights. Great game.
Yeah, it's all available on YouTube.
Yeah, it's great. Great, great game. Very enjoyable if you like those sort of things, so go watch it. But yeah, I think that's probably it for this podcast. Mm-hmm. Just your, I don't know, random episode talking about whatever. That's what this podcast's all about. I'm sure we'll have some other topics that we'll talk about in the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
I want to re-rank the GPUs. So
you want to re-rank them?
We've got some new additions. I think we need to do a re-ranking at some point.
Didn't we do that just recently?
It was much longer ago than you I thought. I think it's like almost 6 months ago.
Really? It feels like yesterday. Don't make me do it again, Tim. Don't.
No, I'm forcing you. Oh, I'm forcing you. You're doing it. Oh, the other thing I wanted to mention. The other thing, because I was thinking, there's two things I wanted to talk about. I want to talk about Pacific Drive. What was the other thing? I've been doing a lot of display testing recently, which is very, some parts are quite tedious. So I need some entertainment and I can't play games because I need to
obviously
pay attention. So I've been watching a channel that I've heard a lot about, but I've never watched any of their content before, which is Jetlag the Game. And I strongly recommend this channel. It's all the production qualities are very good. It's kind of like they do sort of like travel challenges where they go and do like capture the flag, but it's physically in a country, or tag, or you know, various different challenges. And it's quite well made, quite well put together. And there's multiple different seasons. So you can find the challenges that you want to watch. And yeah, it's just enjoyable, sort of light, entertaining content that's well made. And it's almost like those sort of like TV style content on YouTube. So it's, you know, it has that sort of, I don't know, it's nice to see YouTube creators creating content like that previously would have been some sort of, I don't know, cable TV show or something, but it's just available for free on YouTube. And yeah, I'd heard a lot about it. I started watching it and yeah, I think it's really well made and quite good. So
I'd
recommend
out.
Watching that if you just want some nice, easy watching entertainment with some people that, yeah, know how to make that sort of show work. So recommend that. Anyway, that's it for this episode of the Hardware Unboxed podcast. We're up to episode 25. We'll be back next week and hopefully indefinitely, because neither of us, I don't think, have anything planned that should stop us in the next at least little bit. So yeah, subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow us on our audio feeds if you want to get those in your inbox just a little bit earlier. If that's your Spotify or Apple Podcasts or whatever, it's always available there. And yeah, we will see you in the next one. Thanks for listening.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.